JBeam NJ Savitri, everyone. I'm Thinmoy Soundarajan, and this is Cast in the United States with First Post. Today's episode is an exploration of the social isolation that results from caste in the diaspora. Joining us is Priyanka, a Dalit professional who has lived in the U.S. for many years. She will share her own journey to self-acceptance and also the difficulty of navigating a casteist diaspora. Welcome, Priyanka and JBeam.
JBeam Thinmoy, thank you for having me.
So Priyanka, when did you immigrate and what were your first impressions of the diaspora?
Sure. So I moved to the U.S. about 15 years ago when I was in high school. And since then, you know, overall, it's been a very isolating experience. We didn't come here with actually the intention of immigrating at all. One of my parents worked for the Indian government, but I ended up staying back for higher education, and I work here now and I have a life here. And so my first interactions with the diaspora were actually with Indians, you know, who were in the Foreign Service. And down south, it became very clear to me how the Indian state plays a very key role in crafting the narrative around caste, in that it doesn't. It just makes it invisible. It pushes a narrative of this, you know, diverse democracy with a rich, flourishing culture. And so these were some of the first conversations and gathering. There were no overt discussions on caste. You could see how they shaped social dynamics. You could see the segregation. I mean, my parents would only feel safe or comfortable socializing or confiding in others who were Dalits or lower castes. And of course, there weren't many to begin with. And these, you know, institutions are, of course, very hierarchical to begin with. So there's that. So, you know, my first consciousness of caste actually came from my parents' experiences. And of course, there's also, you know, so much stigma around reservation quotas, and the degradation really starts from there, that you don't belong, you know, here, the resentment, the looking down on you because your English isn't good, sometimes even, you know, sabotaging prospects of promotions or any advancements. So really, this is the backdrop against which I began looking at the immigrant diaspora. And, you know, I was a teenager when I first got here, so I just wanted to fit in. But I remember being really turned off by how insular, you know, most Indian American circles were. And I actually felt more kinship with working class, you know, brown and black students and immigrants. And even though I didn't have that vocabulary for, you know, model minority, that idea was actually like very toxic to me. And even though we had huge financial burdens, I just couldn't, you know, relate to this race of making it, quote unquote, in America. And not to mention those circles were just straight up racist. Like, I remember one of my Indian guy friends telling me in high school that he was disappointed in me because I was dating someone outside of my race, literally saying to me, quote, "I thought you were a good Indian girl." So it's just, you know, those, that idea of respectability and even purity became very clear early on. And it was just disgusting. And it turned me off completely. And it wasn't until college that I explicitly, you know, started talking about caste, thinking about caste, having conversations about it. I was, you know, yearning for academic mentors who could help me make more sense of it, but just honestly couldn't find any. But despite that, chose to write a thesis on caste in India. You know, especially looking at reservation quotas, a very sort of exploratory project on what the impact has been, and basically concluding that more obviously needs to happen. And when I did try to reach out to an Indian professor who I think taught, you know, South Asian history, he got very antagonistic and told me, you know, something like, "I'm attacking the hand that fed me," with regard to me asking for more than just quotas for Dalits. So, you know, like, these are the types of instances that told me that how the silencing of people happens when they want to speak up about Dalit identity, you know, rights, or simply just ask for more. Brahmins get very uncomfortable. Luckily, I had a professor in my department who I had a good relationship with, who really guided me through it. And even though he didn't know much about the subject, I mean, he was a white American, he really stood by me and encouraged me to pursue the topic. And actually, that was a really important lesson for me, that like, those who weren't actually invested in Brahminism could be better allies. So yeah, it's overall, you know, even when I did start to find Dalit scholars and people working on caste in grad school, it was just hard to find someone to just connect with, you know, at a human level and not just as a thing that had to be studied and theorized. And so, you know, there weren't that many resources or much guidance. There wasn't a lot of circles that I could connect with other Dalits with. And even I just felt also self-conscious. I couldn't discuss this with even my closest friends when I was younger. It was something I felt, you know, that I had to carry by myself.
Well, yeah. And I think this is actually like such a really poignant point, is that you grow up so isolated as a Dalit in the diaspora because of people wanting to hide because of the shame. But also, like, you know, once you're an adult and able to kind of make your own choices, because my parents definitely hid as well. But I think that, you know, the challenges of all of these different institutions that line up to tell you that and basically gaslight you that caste doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. It's shameful to talk about, and, you know, we're quote unquote biting the hand that feeds. That was like textbook, some of the same exact things that happened to me. Like, I remember having a conversation with someone who had been referred to me to help, like, help shape a conversation around caste. And that person, who actually was from the Foreign Service, said, you know, there is no problem with caste in India. And in fact, you know, you might be better to be served if you were to focus on the plight of the Red Indian and the reservations they're on, as opposed to stirring up trouble where there is none. And I remember like feeling it like a tight slap on my face. Mm. And they were saying it to, you know, the go-between between us was like a white American. And that person was Jewish. And they knew, as a survivor of the Holocaust, that I wasn't lying. They knew because they actually saw the images of atrocity. And so they knew I wasn't lying. So it was just this person who they had respected. They, when they saw the denial, like in that concrete form, they understood like how deep the impunity went. And as a young person, and also as a young adult, navigating these spaces where you have gatekeepers, not just there, but in academia, is very difficult. And, you know, I had a professor also say to me, you know, caste was like not the access to examine South Asia, and that there wasn't any significant Dalit leaders. And it would be better to look at like people from the leftist ranks, because again, they're, you know, the Dalit movement wasn't significant. And this is in the 90s and 2000s that they're saying this, which is wild, you know? So it's really poignant, you know? And, you know, I think that that might be like a really great place for you to kind of, you know, share with our listeners, like, how did stuff like this make you feel? And what were some of the challenges like that you had within your family as you guys are all going through this?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this processing honestly happened much, much later, to the point where I'm still now processing. So it was not like in the moment I was realizing all this. And the point about gaslighting is so real, because there were times where I was like, oh, this is just not a valid thesis topic. And for years, I felt like, oh, this was not a good thesis. Like, you know, I didn't really get the validation that I wanted. I mean, even though I had a great sort of ally really encouraging me and all of that, but it was like, I felt for years that this was not the right thing. Like, am I just making this up? Like, I didn't really get that validation. And, you know, talking about processing this with my family, I mean, that is still happening, you know? And I think that is one of the hardest things about this, that because of the shame, because of how the erasure, we don't even have a space to process this as a family, you know?
Priyanka, do you feel like there was one instance that really stands out in your mind about maybe like a casteist experience that you've had?
You know, there's obviously instances like the recent Cisco case, right, where there is clear harassment based on caste, and it is a clear, you know, violation of someone's humanity. But, you know, in my experience, the way I felt it was the other way, was like making you feel invisible and presenting like assimilation as the only route to sort of success and mobility. Like, there's a very real violence to that, because according to that logic, the only way you can survive and create a legacy for yourself is by denying yourself and by espousing this dominant culture even if that culture denies you your humanity and kills your people. It is erasure. It is never seeing yourself in textbooks. It is being taught Hindu scripture in college without any critical analysis on caste. It is like me having to tell students who went to Columbia who Dr. Ambedkar was, which is ridiculous. That's crazy. No. Like Indian students, you know, who saw a photo of Dr. Ambedkar in my home. Anyway, so it was just like things like that. This logic of like assimilation and just making yourself invisible and your Dalit identity invisible has really penetrated the psyche of my family to the point that we don't really talk about caste or rather the impact it has had on our lives. There is so much fear and shame that has plagued our lives. There is no real sort of pride in claiming who we are. I think it's had very real effects on our self-esteem, on envisioning like a thriving life for ourselves. So, you know, I suppose it's the intergenerational impact that this has had on my family, which has been the hardest, I would say, even though it's not like an instance, it's like the effect.
The thing I thought that was always so profound about being out as Dalit was that every time we would publicly speak or, you know, there would be a place where I'd be engaging with South Asians, someone would always come up to me in secret and tell me, you know, I'm your community too. This is really important. And I'm sorry I can't be out, but thank you for being out. And there was just this like very profound exchange of oppressed people seeing each other and also recognizing the limitations we have with all of this violence around us. And so I'm just wondering, like, knowing that these were some of the limitations, what was the turning point for you in terms of coming into your own as a Dalit American and in terms of how you look at this moment for yourself?
It was community. And obviously you were a huge part of that. Like it was like to be seen, being like, oh, wow, like this is a conversation that people are having in the diaspora where, you know, we just don't have to continue like this. The dominant sort of narrative of the diaspora doesn't have to be this like empty, full of platitude, you know, Savarna culture. It was really that, to be honest. It was like being seen by other people. And I'm still working on this, but to like start to cultivate a community. And it was not just Dalit people. It was like other allies who really included caste in their analysis, included caste in their organizing, that really gave me the impression that like, wow, like an alternative is possible, that whatever I'm sort of struggling with, like has a vocabulary, has a space in the diaspora.
So Priyanka, thank you for saying those things. Those are, you know, so hard hitting and close to the heart. I'm just wondering, there's like many people in the diaspora who are Dalits, were growing up often without knowing or facing these same issues, not being able to come out. And I'm wondering if you have any kind of advice or, you know, even coping strategies that you have to offer for other Dalits who are navigating some of these same issues.
I mean, to be honest, I have been coping by, first of all, like reconnecting with our history, to be honest. Like, you know, I talked about assimilation and all that erasure that happened. What for me, what's really important now is to regain all that has been denied to us, to get inspiration from our ancestors, from, you know, encouraging my loved ones to talk about their journeys and actually, you know, document them. Like assimilation, of course, is a very, it's a survival tactic, but now I have the privilege to break out from that mold. So really devoting myself to that, treating our stories as being worthy of documentation, like oral histories are especially important for us, I think. So diving deeper into the brilliance of our people. So even when I felt the loneliest, like I sort of dug deeper into our ancestors, you know, and reading and learning. And that to me felt, you know, like I was connecting with a piece of myself. For other people, I would say find a community that is safe and supportive, affirming. I know that's easier said than done. I've only started building this now. I mean, it took me more than a decade to realize that I needed this. And, you know, even before this, I've been lucky to be able to lean on very supportive, you know, Black and women of color who are very dear to me. But there's nothing like having a community where you just don't have to explain yourself. You don't have to educate others on your background. You can just be, you know. You also obviously need mentors who understand caste oppression, regardless of which industry you are in. And this is how part of my, you know, consciousness was. It was like Dalit folks, seeing Dalit folks really be on the front lines, fighting for their rights and dignity. But it's just not okay that that's the only time that they're valued. Like, it doesn't have to always just be you. Like, society, I feel like, can't stand it if a Dalit person is just off living, you know, their best life. And this is pretty obvious, but like, self-preservation is so important for Dalits, and actively taking care of yourself. And especially for like queer Dalit people, right? Like, and trans and non-binary people, especially when there's such a struggle with mental health in our community. So I would say go to therapy if you are able to. I mean, it's still hard to find Dalit therapists, of course, in the diaspora, but you know, there is a movement to decolonize therapy, and those folks do understand the power dynamics that come with casteism. So, and also just learning about Dalit feminism especially has been a real gift, because let's face it, the reality is that most Dalit spaces are quite male dominated and patriarchal. So trying to cultivate a truly intersectional way of being and centering Dalit women, you know, that's helped me navigate things. And also, you know, my background is in international affairs, so it's been very helpful to have an internationalist sort of outlook on caste and struggle to create, you know, transnationalist solidarities, especially when such, you know, violent nationalisms are being pushed both here in the US and in India. So.
Well, and I'm just wondering, you know, one question also, I think just kind of stemming from this conversation is really, you know, what do you want to tell Savarnas who are listening? Because I think that when we are talking about the development of caste in the diaspora, it's not just something that happens to Dalits. It's actually something that is being actively cultivated, built, and invested in by networks of caste privilege. So what would you say to Savarnas who are really angered and moved by what you're saying? What should they be doing next?
I would say that you have a lot of work to do, that this is your problem, that this is the doing of you and your ancestors, and you must do the labor now of undoing it. You know, Dalit, Bahujan, Adivasi people bear the brunt of caste oppression, and it's been inhibiting our own potential. We have been the ones on the front lines of every action, of all the organizing that happens against casteism. And so it's time to make the connections between the rise in casteism and all the linkages, the political, the capital, the tech linkages that are rooted here in the diaspora that fuel the rise of casteism. In one way or the other, you are complicit. This is bigger than you as an individual. It doesn't matter if you go to every like BLM protest or you're doing a lot for your community. We just cannot afford to not incorporate caste into the framework of social justice in which you operate. So you might call yourself progressive, but if you're not actively doing something to undo caste, it's just not enough. And you know, it's going to be difficult whether you realize it or not. Brahminism is a central part of your identity as a Savarna, and spurning it will cause a lot of turbulence. But that is what is needed. Like, that is the level of commitment that is needed. You have to step up and make space for Dalit Bahujans. Like, think beyond, and also think beyond representation politics, really, and look inward. I think a lot of Savarnas actually don't realize how they reproduce like caste and wealth and other privileges. Like, just because you're not roaming around with a biodata doesn't mean that this is not happening. You know, Savarna spaces are so exclusionary to begin with. So stop making memes about the Indian matchmaking show and actually start doing something to annihilate caste, I'd say.
Yeah. So my takeaway from that is we need less memes. And we need more organizing. Would that be right, Priyanka?
Sure. Or like the right memes, like if they're subversive about caste, sure. But like a lot of them currently are just empty, and they're actually not challenging Savarnas. Like, so more memes perhaps about challenging Savarnas and challenging caste.
Well, and I also think hidden in what you're saying is also that for South Asians in the diaspora, there's a comfort for just hiding within the category of brownness, and being able to kind of like really be submersed in the wounds from white supremacy, but not really look at the fact that South Asian as a category is fraught with all of these divides of caste and nation and language, and really also mark deep, deep centuries of violence between all of our communities. Because we might be racialized into one category by white supremacy, but we have a lot of ish between us that we need to structurally take on. And the burden of taking on caste by the caste oppressed, it's unacceptable at this point, particularly when caste privileged communities have way more thresholds for wealth and spaciousness to take this on.
Correct. I mean, you're so right. There have been so many times when I've tried to bring up caste that I've been accused of just fracturing the community, or, you know, like just preventing unity, which is more important to people.
Can you tell us more about that? Because I'm sure that's an experience other people have felt.
Well, even in like progressive, even social justice circles, I would say, like, if we bring caste, like, it's just, first of all, like, there's a hierarchy and priority of different social justice issues, and caste is just never a priority. And whenever I've tried to, like, provide critique, right, like, so, for example, with any sort of pop culture appearance, so what was that Mindy Kaling show, Never Have I Ever, when I've tried to bring up, like, how Brahminical the family was and the background, and, like, how it was, like, for me, watching it, it was just not, it was like not a pleasant experience at all. In fact, it was, you know, somewhat triggering. So when I brought that up, it's almost like you're just like this killjoy that took away this like very prideful moment from Indian Americans who were just so happy to see themselves being represented. And that actually is the point.
Yeah, well, there is definitely so much more to this conversation, Priyanka, and we hope to have you back because your voice is so insightful and powerful and deeply poignant. So thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you, and we appreciate all our listeners who have joined us online, and we look forward to you joining us on our next episode. So thank you, everybody, and Jay Beam and Jay Salvatore.
Thank you.